5'8", inbounding over the 7-footer Cisse. Lobs it in, and Pack has to catch it at midcourt. Nigel Pack for the win. It's it! 2 seconds remain! Can they close the door right here and get a stop? 2.2 on the clock. Likely to Anderson. Heaves it. Kansas State hangs on.
K-State men win last night over Oklahoma State. 71-68 was the final. Nigel Pack with the game winner, as you heard right there. And he finished with 22 points, his seventh career 20-point game, his fourth this year. And that was his first career game winner. And Mark Smith, 19 points, 8 rebounds. Mike McGurl, first start in Big 12 play, had a career-high 10 rebounds. Forrest Sisco with 6 points. Bryce Thompson led the way, former KU Jayhawk, with 22 for Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State now 10-11 overall and 3-6 in the Big 12. K-State improves to 11-10 in the Big 12 and 3-6. 11-10 overall, 3-6 in the Big 12. They're now in a four-way tie for 6th. Congratulations. Apparently, they say there's 5,860 fans at Bramlage. For based on the pictures I saw, there's no way there was 5,860 fans at Bramlage. The one side was okay. The other side was really, really bare. But K-State, at least for the fans that attended, got their money's worth and enjoyed a great game. And K-State won at the end.
Hey, it's a 10-10 team at home. You should beat that team, right?
Yes.
Like, that's a win that they needed to get if they want to be any kind of respectable basketball team, right? And so they did it and, got the shot that they needed at the end of the game. But, yeah, it's obviously you got to build off of that, but it's a start.
Bruce Weber, the key, getting stops late in games, which they haven't done in close games recently.
This is about stops, guys. We could have beaten TCU if you get a stop. All the stuff we did bad or wrong or whatever, if you get stops, even against Kansas, those last couple possessions, get stops, now you still win the game, and the offensive part doesn't, so you've got to stay locked in, and that's what we kept talking about in the huddle. So hopefully we learn from that. It's one game. They celebrated, but not overly. They said we should win. We're at home, and we gotta play with that great passion.
K-State wins 71-68. K-State women not as successful. They fall on the road at number 11, Iowa State, 70-55. Ayoka Lee was held to 12 points in the game. K-State women now 16-6 overall, 6-4 in the Big 12. Local sports turnover, Dusty, our Athlete of the Week, locker room chats, and more.
Yeah, high school wrestling guy actually coming up tonight as well. Bullet at Riley County in a duel at 5:30 this evening, and then in the NCKL, Concordia's at Chapman at 6:30 tonight. So if you're looking for some wrestling to attend, those are happening here this evening for local teams. Also, as Wade said, we have locker room chats tonight on Katy Country 94 and katycountry94.com. We'll talk with the head coaches of St. John's Tipton, Lakeside, Rock Hills, and Sylvan Lucas this evening around 5:15. So if you ever miss our locker room chats, again, they're always posted on our locker room chat podcast at katycountry94.com as well. Now, Lakeside senior Kylan Cunningham has been named the NCKSports.com Cunningham Telephone and Cable Athlete of the Week. Cunningham helped the Lakeside boys team to a 10-4 record so far and 6-0 mark in the Northern Plains League at this point. He did have one of his best performances of his career this past Friday night in Lakeside's 59-48 win over Osborne. Tied a career high with 29 points, scored 18 of those in a pivotal third quarter to help the Knights create some separation in that game. He shot 10 of 17 from the floor, 3 of 6 from three-point land, 6 of 9 from the free throw line. The win for Lakeside, their first over Osborne since January 24th of 2012, snapping a 25-game skid. Lakeside has won 9 of their last 10 games now. In that time, Cunningham has scored 20 or more points 6 times on the season. He's averaging just under 18 points a game, 4 rebounds, 3.5 assists, 2.5 steals, and also shooting 44% from the floor, 76% at the line, and also has made a team-high 29 three-pointers this season for Lakeside. Again, Kylan Cunningham, our NCKSports.com Cunningham Telephone and Cable Athlete of the Week. Congratulations to him. If you'd like to nominate an Athlete of the Week, all you got to do is send us your nominations, and we'll announce the winners each week, and you can nominate an athlete from any school sport. So congratulations again to Kylan, our Athlete of the Week. High School Hoops coming up tomorrow night on Katy Country 94. It's Ellsworth at Beloit, also at the Beloit Trojan Channel. And then on Z96.3 Through the Lake, we have Rock Hills at Lakeside, so stay tuned for that. And as always, for the latest in local sports in North Central Kansas, you can always check out the website at ncksports.com. It has everything you need as far as local sports are concerned. Again, ncksports.com.
All right, college football signing day was yesterday, and I have no idea who signed with who. Really don't care. I really don't, unless there's some local people
there was,
I know.
There was like a total of six high schoolers that signed between our two colleges yesterday. Everything else was done earlier.
Already done, so what's the point? Anyway, Lance Leipold, head coach at KU, on how the team needs to be built, as he seems to be having it going in the right direction.
Sometimes when guys leave the program, you're not just going to always replace with freshmen, especially when you're the youngest Power 5 football team in the country and one of the youngest teams overall. We're extremely young. I like where our talent level is at. But at the same time, as we saw ourselves kind of go through, midway, from whether it be through Iowa State or Oklahoma State or one of those programs that were senior laden, a lot of super seniors, all those things, you start seeing where our youth and overall physical development isn't completely where it's going to be someday, and we have to address that.
So that's the viewpoint from KU and Lance Leipold on what they're trying to do with their football program. Chris Kleiman on the current roster construction of the K-State Wildcat football team, who, by the way, Cade Warner, Kurt Warner's son, will come back and play another year, a super senior year. That was announced yesterday. Adrian Martinez talked to the media. Don't have any sound with Adrian, but he had some interesting things to say yesterday and very impressive in his 15 minutes with the media. And I think he's going to be I still want to make fun of K-State fans. I will, because you were the ones trolling Nebraska because you don't like Nebraska, and all of a sudden Adrian Martinez is one of your own. And you were ripping Adrian Martinez on how bad he is, and now he's part of you, and he's suddenly just a great quarterback. Because what, he wears your colors? No, he was a good quarterback in Nebraska. He wasn't a superstar. He had the talent to be a Heisman Trophy winner, honestly. But he still had amazing numbers, and without Adrian Martinez, Nebraska didn't even come close to losing all those close games last year. But here's Chris Kleiman on the current roster construction.
It's tight, but we still have some room for some needs. We're probably going to need a defensive back. We're probably going to need a linebacker, a couple other positions, probably going to need a running back. So we have room on those. Plus, you just never know, as I'm learning on a day-to-day basis, what happens with your current roster. We have a handful of scholarships. We have a handful of what we would call initials where we can sign some guys. We need to play out this spring now.
So the thoughts on K-State football program, Dusty?
It's what Coach Kleiman said there. I mean, you like to have guys coming back and some of those super senior. It's just so much different, like he's talking about, the way you construct a team now, and so was Coach Leipold there for KU, that you just – this doesn't mean as much right now, because you're – a lot of these teams are starting to move over to utilizing the transfer portal just as much or more than they're using high school recruiting. And so I think that's hurting some of the high school kids that are trying to get scholarships, to be completely honest with you. But it's kind of what it is right now. And so I've never gotten overly excited about this time of year for college football, because I think you've always got to wait until it all plays out, right? You got to wait until these guys actually get on campus first and actually put on a jersey. And so that's why I'm more excited about guys like Adrian Martinez, because they're already on campus and they're getting ready to go. But, K-State is what they are right now. I mean, they have holes to fill just like every other college football team does. And you do. You have to get through the spring to see how many more defections you're going to have. That seems to be more of an issue nowadays, too, that there's more people that leave after the spring than maybe did in the past, I feel like. So with that new, with all the transfer rules the way they are. So, I feel good about K-State the way they are right now. But obviously the roster could change a lot before the start of next season.
No doubt. All right, let's shift into the NFL, the coaching vacancy update. If you don't think Brian Flores has a case against National Football League, let me present Exhibit 1A. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. They're at the end of the season, once Sean Payton stepped down for the New Orleans Saints, 9 of the 32, over 25% of the NFL head coaching jobs vacant.
Mm-hmm.
So far, out of those 9 openings, 5 have been filled. How many black coaches do you think have been hired of the 5 and 9 that have been filled?
Well, I don't believe any.
The answer is 0. The Raiders are going to hire Josh McDaniels, who is a retread head coach who has coached before. Nathaniel Hackett, first time he's going to be a head coach, younger guy. He's going to be the Broncos head coach. Brian Daboll, first time head coach, offensive coordinator Bills. He's going to be head coach of the Giants. Matt Eberflus, never been a head coach. He's going to be head coach of the Chicago Bears. He was a DC in Indianapolis. And now the news coming out today that the Minnesota Vikings, who were going after Jim Harbaugh, but he announced yesterday he's going to go back to Michigan and stay at Michigan, which I think is a good move on his part. He can make more money being a coach in college, to be quite frank. Kevin O'Connell, who, yes, happens to be white too. Kevin O'Connell, offensive coordinator for the Rams, is going to be announced as the new head coach of the Minnesota Vikings. The New Orleans Saints, word is, although not official, that their new head coach, they will stay probably in-house, not official, but if they stay in-house, word is Dennis Allen would get the job. Dennis Allen's record with the Raiders as a head coach was 8-28. Dennis Allen is white. Dennis Allen would be the ultimate in retread head coach. And of all the coaches that were fired this year, the only one that had a winning record that was fired was a black coach in Brian Flores, and he has sued the National Football League. So let me think about this, and this is why I said Eric Bieniemy is not going to get a head coaching job this year. Eric Bieniemy, Brian Flores, and there are other – Leslie Frazier's another one that, you know, did okay in Minnesota, has never gotten a second chance. Mm-hmm. But, boy, Dennis Allen probably will. Oh, man, Josh McDaniels does. You know, it just it's there's something wrong here.
Dennis Allen getting another chance as a head coach NFL is a red flag if there's ever been one.
I agree with you. And so we know we hear these sham interviews. That's what Brian Flores is accusing the Broncos and other a couple other organizations, including the National Football League. And listen, if you don't think there's racism within all of the white owners, which, by the way, that's what this is. I mean, every single owner of the National Football League is white. They're billionaire rich people, okay, that none of them are black. And if you don't think racism exists within the ownership of professional sports, all I got to do is point to Exhibit 2A. Donald Sterling, who was the owner of the LA Clippers in the NBA, he got finally pushed out and had to give up the team, sell the team, because of audio and video that was caught of him being an outright and direct racist. So don't even try, ladies and gentlemen, to tell me there isn't racism, first of all, in society, and secondly, that there isn't racism when it comes to professional sports. It's obvious. It is very evident. Now, you can say, well, Wade, if you want to hide behind this, go ahead and make my day, as Clint Eastwood would say. If you want to hide behind, well, you know, Josh McDaniels, Nathaniel Hackett, Brian Daboll, Matt Eberflus, Kevin O'Connell, you know, four of those are first-time head coaches. They're just the most qualified. You know, they did well as coordinators. Josh McDaniels, you can say, well, you know, he did okay in Denver and so forth and so on. So, you know, he's been waiting, and so this is an opportunity for him, and you believe he's, you know, he's still young and learned from his first head coaching experience. Okay, fine. If you argue that, you can argue it. I'm not saying you hire a black coach just to hire a black coach, just like you don't hire a woman to be a head coach just to be a woman to be a head coach. You hire the best candidate. I don't care if that person is purple, blue, pink, yellow. Whoever the best candidate is for the job is the person that you should hire at anything in life, to be quite honest with you. But Dennis Allen? The Saints are going to go from Sean Payton to Dennis Allen? It might work out. I'm not saying it won't. Bill Belichick wasn't, I mean, he was a decent coach at Cleveland before he went to with New England. He made the playoffs. The Browns hadn't been in years. So it's not like he was horrible in Cleveland. But it is really ridiculous that, I mean, I've had a few people tell me, oh, this is all made up. I'm like, how the hell would you know? Like, what are you talking? I mean, come on, man. The proof's in the pudding. You have 32 NFL coaches. We're just talking NFL right now. And only one is black. But yet the league is made up of predominantly black players. Mm-hmm. There's not a single black owner. There are hardly any African-American people that are in the front offices, especially at the GM position. There are a few. And you wonder why Brian Flores is suing the National Football League? And before you say, well, he's making all this stuff up, what does he gain by making all this up? Think about this for a second. He is risking his coaching career by doing this. Mm-hmm. Do you really think a person would be dumb and stupid enough that was smart enough to be a head coach in the National Football League and have winning seasons with a quarterback that isn't that good and an owner that is a mess, and then gets fired after it because they don't see eye to eye on certain things, which happens with white GMs and white coaches. All you got to do is go back to Marty Schottenheimer and the San Diego Chargers at the time. Marty went 14-2. He and the GM didn't speak for a full year. They didn't even speak to each other. And then he was fired after they lost to the Patriots because the Patriots recovered a fumble after they threw an interception when the Charger player refused to go down. And Marty had just told him on the sideline, all the whole defense, you intercept the ball, go down. So, no, it's not just a, from the standpoint of GMs and coaches don't get along, or owners and GMs don't get along, or owners and coaches don't get along. No, that's happened. That happens all the time. I'm sure there's disagreements between Brett Veach and Andy Reid. I'm sure Andy Reid has disagreements, doesn't agree with everything Clark Hunt says. And I'm sure Clark Hunt doesn't agree with everything Andy Reid and Brett Veach say. But the thing is, Brian Flores alleges in the lawsuit that Stephen Ross, the owner, offered him $100,000 per loss. His first year as a head coach, Flores alleges that the owner was wanting him to tank. Now, why would Brian Flores be like, I just got my first head coaching job and you want me to lose on purpose? Think about the position he was put in there. Well, do you think he's going to have any respect from the players when he tanks as a coach? No. It reflects on the coach more than the owner. I've said this before 1,000 times. The players and the coaches are the focal points. They are the ones that talk after every single game in a press conference. Do you see the owners having press conferences after games? The only one I know is Jerry Jones. Mm-hmm. Nobody else does. That's why when you have Major League Baseball right now and you have a lockout, the players didn't strike. The owners locked them out. And I hear people go, oh, the players are greedy. They're not the ones that struck. The owners are locking them out. The billionaire owners are locking out the players. Yes, there are many players making millions of dollars. I don't kid you. I understand that. But when you always take the side of the owners, always taking the side of the owners, like, I understand you can understand different individuals' cases. With this owner, this organization, you want to take the side of the owner, fine. Or there's a certain player that you know is just ridiculous, asking for way too much. But come on, folks. I mean, think about it. You get your first head coaching job in the National Football League, and the owner offers you an extra $100,000 to lose per game? How can you look your players in the eye, coach them? As a coach, you're supposed to coach them up. Isn't the ultimate goal of sports to win?
Yes.
I don't think Brian Flores would just make this stuff up. Why would he? He has nothing to gain by making it up. He has everything to lose. If he turns out to be a complete liar, he loses everything. The easy thing for him to do was to be quiet and go interview and eventually hopefully get another job. And if not, he'll still get paid lots of money to be a defensive coordinator somewhere. So when people tell me that this is a bunch of hooey, folks, it makes no sense. There's no reason to put your neck out there like he is. So the response, Stephen Ross, he said, called everything false, malicious, and defamatory, promising to defend his personal integrity as well as that of the organization. Flores filed a lawsuit in Manhattan Federal Court against the NFL and 3 teams, the Dolphins, the Giants, and the Broncos, alleging racial discrimination in hiring practices. Ross said, I take great personal exception to these malicious attacks, and the truth must be known. His allegations are false, malicious, and defamatory. We understand there are media reports stating that the NFL intends to investigate his claims, and we will cooperate fully. I welcome that investigation. I am eager to defend my personal integrity and the integrity and values of the entire Miami Dolphins organization from this baseless, unfair, and disparaging claims. End of quote. Now listen, we could, at the end of the day, Brian Flores could have made all this up. I guess it's possible. He made all this up. And Stephen Ross is absolutely the greatest guy on earth. But something tells me that's not what's going on here. Hugh Jackson has come out now, former coach of the Cleveland Browns. He said he, too, was offered money as a coach to lose to improve the draft status to get higher in the draft. And now you got two coaches, and he lost. Trust me, he did it. I think he did it. Didn't help his career as a head coach in regards to getting another gig as a head coach in the National Football League, did it?
No.
So, listen, if you want to sit here and you say there's no racism exists, then please explain to me why there's only one black football coach, head coach, in the National Football League. Because you can't, if you can sit here and tell me that Leslie Frazier is a genius, you can tell me he's a great defensive coordinator, you can tell Eric Bieniemy is a man that is respected by so many players, and everybody speaks very highly of Eric Bieniemy. That's two examples. Brian Flores, I mean, look what he did in Miami. He won. Like, somebody pointed out yesterday, Zach Taylor's record with the Cincinnati Bengals before Joe Burrow was drafted was 6-25.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Flores doesn't have Joe Burrow. And he was somehow able to go start 1-7, which maybe he tanked on purpose and got $100,000 and then said, you know what, the heck with you, owner. I'm going to start winning. And they went 9-8. I think Brian Flores isn't stupid. I think he is trying to finally say, I've had enough. We have had enough. And this can be very closely followed, this lawsuit. And whether or not there's a settlement, whether or not all this stuff comes to fruition is true, whether some of it's true, some of it's false. Usually when you have any kind of story like this, here's what happens. Not all of it is true. Not all of it is false. Probably some of it is, some of it isn't. Or some of it is interpreted differently. Some of it's exaggerated. Some of it is spot on. But he didn't just go after the National Football League. He went after individual organizations as well in his lawsuit. That needs to be noted. The Dolphins, the Giants, and the Broncos. And also, by the way, when Bill Belichick slips up, texting Brian Flores, he thought he was texting Brian Daboll, and it was Brian Flores, and the job has already been given to Brian Daboll, and Brian Flores has an interview 3 days later. How do you say that's not discrimination? How do you not say there's something fishy here? That was all to comply with the Rooney Rule. Why wouldn't you interview Brian Flores before you interview Brian Daboll, and then this would never be an issue? Even if you had no intent of hiring Brian Flores, if the Giants, why wouldn't you interview him first? Get it out of the way, then interview Brian Daboll, and then boom, you hire him, and then Flores wouldn't have anything to say like this. I mean, the audacity of the Giants organization to do something like this. And I'm going to bet you they're not the only one that's done it.
No. I've had a discussion with some people about the Rooney Rule, and I agree with it. I think it's a rule that does not help the cause at all.
Like, I don't think so either.
All the rule states is that you have to interview a minority candidate.
Right.
It doesn't say that you have to actually take it seriously.
No,
it doesn't say that you have to hire a minority candidate. It says you have to interview one before you can actually officially hire a new coach, right? And so I've had people tell me, well, the Rooney Rule is stupid and that you shouldn't, like, nobody should be able to sue over that anyway because it's a dumb rule. And I'm like, well, you know what? I don't think the rule is doing what it should be either. I don't think it's a great rule, to be completely honest with you, either, because I don't think it's not forcing the hand of anybody to actually hire a minority coach.
No.
So I was like, but here's an analogy. It's still a rule, right? It's still in the book. You have got to do that. You have to interview a minority candidate before I say, hey, Brian Daboll, here's your job. You've got it. We want you. We haven't interviewed anybody else yet, but you got the job. Here's the stuff. Here's the paperwork. We're going to get this stuff to you early because we know you're our guy, but we have to do this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they've already offered him the job. Well, there's a rule in place that says you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of made the analogy when we were talking about this. It's like, I think 60-mile-an-hour speed limit's stupid, so I'm just going to go drive 80 and break the rule. I still have to answer for that.
Yes.
I'm still in the wrong, and I've broken a rule or a law or whatever. I'm going to get in trouble for that.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the Giants are right now.
Mm-hmm.
They might think it's a stupid rule. You might think it's a stupid rule. It is still a rule within the National Football League that you absolutely have to do this.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get some flack, and you'll get in trouble for it if you don't do it. So it's just like, I don't like the rule either. I don't like a lot of rules.
Mm-hmm.
But we still have to follow them because they're rules or their laws or whatever they are, or there will be consequences.
And let me say this. I think if you run a business, you should be able to hire whoever you want to hire. I don't think you should be forced by people to hire who they want. Okay, so I want to make that very clear. I'm not saying that somebody has to hire Brian Flores. You might interview him. He might be the biggest jerk and pompous, and he might not be. What I'm saying is there's 32 NFL jobs. Nine. Over 25% popped up, and many of the top coaching candidates, according to all kinds of media outlets and people in the know in the National Football League, over half of the top candidates for these jobs are black. Not a single one has filled any of these vacancies. Josh McDaniels, Nathaniel Hackett, Brian Daboll, Matt Eberflus, Kevin O'Connell, the latest today. That's five of the nine. So apparently all the top catchy candidates, all the white ones are going to get the job, and all the black ones are not, the way this is going. And you can't tell me there isn't somebody that is black, that is a coaching candidate, that isn't worthy of being a head coach in this football league. And there are nine. It's one thing. There'd be one thing if there's two openings.
Yeah, yeah.
There's nine openings. It just doesn't add up. I mean, if you just use common sense and logic, it doesn't add up. And if you sit here and tell me, well, African-American coaches, black coaches aren't any good. Well, they're good enough to be coordinators, but they're too dumb to be head coaches. Gee, I don't know. Mike Tomlin's had a pretty doggone career and won a couple of Super Bowls. There are coaches that have. Tony Dungy was, I don't know, a pretty good coach that won a Super Bowl. I mean, there are black coaches that have won Super Bowls. It used to be the whole thing was, remember the old Rush Limbaugh thing, you know, about, you know, quarterbacks that are black are too dumb to play. That was one, basically what he said.
Yeah.
You're right. They weren't smart enough. Donovan McNabb, remember that? And, you know, Doug Williams, when he did what he did with the Redskins and they blew out the Broncos and he played unbelievable, that was a huge landmark moment for the quarterback position in regards to African-American black people, black men being quarterback. Because that was a bit of a misnomer, is that black people are not good enough to be quarterback. Well, that's been proven wrong, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Quite a bit now. We got a lot of black quarterbacks now in this league. And some, there's some of the most exciting guys you'll ever see play the position. And we got some that are mixed. You know, Patrick Mahomes is one, okay? So it is amazing we made some strides there, but yet when it comes to the coaching, and even ownership, if you want to go a step further, but when it comes to the coaching, this is where we are in 2022. And you know, maybe what Brian Flores is doing is exactly what needs to be done, and somebody should have done this a long time ago.
Yeah,
maybe
somebody Brian was Flores step out and do this.
Maybe Brian eventually. Flores doesn't have enough to win this case, and he's going to get blackballed, and he's going to be put in his place. I don't know, but I'm going to tell you something. Brian Flores, I think, has a lot of guts to do this. I think he has a lot of stones and a lot of guts to do this because he is risking his coaching career to do something to make things better for other people of his own skin color. Whether it works out, and it works out for him, great. I mean, kudos to him if it does. And if it doesn't, he at least can go to bed at night and say, I tried.
Yeah.
Instead of, what if? Or, I'm going to keep taking $100,000 to lose on purpose. That, you know, it's so funny. You talk about the integrity of the game. If this is true, and I believe it's always possible. I mean, I'm sure it's happened even before this. When owners are offering coaches extra money to lose games, you sit here and you start to go, was the Chiefs game against Sunday against the Bengals fixed? You start to wonder, because that was horrible, horrible, horrible play in the second half by Patrick Mahomes. Now, why would Patrick Mahomes, there's not enough money in the world to throw a game, in my opinion, for Patrick Mahomes. He's got enough money coming in. Okay, but the people have kind of joked about that. But if you're talking about, well, no, that would never happen, that's the integrity of the game. And the NFL talks about the integrity of the game. Well, you know, the Raiders and the Chargers won't play to a tie and take a knee every play on the final game of the season because that's the integrity of the game. Well, if you're worried about integrity of the game, you sure as heck better investigate owners offering $100,000 per loss to lose on purpose, because guess what? There's no integrity of the game on that.
No.
So stay tuned. Stay tuned. By the way, Major League Baseball, don't know if they're going to start on time or not. They're still talking, and the owners, remember, are the ones that locked them out, not the players striking. Keep this in mind.
Brian Haney.
Yo, Vanilla, kick it one time, boy.
I hopped up the plane at LAX with a dream, my cardigan. Welcome to the land of fame, excess. Am I going to fit in?
Hopped off the bus. You're going to make a clip out of this if I sing it.
Sure.
At LAX with a dream and a cardigan. Living a life, fame, excess. Am I going to fit in? Jumped in the cab. Here I am. There I go again. Something, something. I'm sure there's some listener out there that knows what song I'm talking about.
Probably,
and they're singing along to it right now.
Probably.
But I'm not taking the bait from Wade Gersner. I don't want to have a new intro clip with me singing.
Dang it.
So I put my hands up. They're playing that song, The Butterflies Fly Away. I'm nodding my head like, yeah, moving my lips like, yeah, because it's Wade Gersner Sports Radio Show, baby, right here.
It's Thursday, and that means it's time to talk to a professional who would never forget a name.
So I wish your son Miller all the best.
My name is Noah!
It's the voice of the Jayhawks, Brian Haney, right now on the Sports Ticket. Brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. at 118 North Millen, Beloit. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Call them at 738-5701.
And it is a party when we get Brian Haney, the voice of Jayhawks, with us on the show. Brought to you, as always, by Anderson Insurance Agency, as the Jayhawks finding a way, Brian, to win shorthanded in Ames. And I heard the news. I was getting ready for some high school basketball the other night, and there were some KU fans I talked to and some other people like, oh, you know, Ochai's not going to play. And, I mean, KU barely beat Iowa State at home with Ochai. Now, no Ochai. Well, then KU's going to lose at Ames. And I said, listen, in self you trust. Something tells me KU's going to rally the troops, circle the wagons. Some kids are going to step up. They're going to get opportunities. I said it might be that Yusefu might go off for 20-25 tonight, and that'll be his turning point. I said something tells me KU's still going to win tonight without Ochai and no Remy Martin on top of that. And what do you know? They went up to Ames and they won. It wasn't necessarily pretty, Brian, but they got the job done. And it is amazing how some kids, whether it's kids, young men, young women, whatever, step up in some of these moments like that.
Yeah, no doubt. And those are the types of performances that if you survive it, you're better for it, because guys like Joseph Yetsefu and DeJuan Harris now have more confidence than they had a couple of days ago. And you've got David McCormick, you know, being forced to step into a larger role. Bill Self saying in the pregame that, you know, our advantage roster-wise would be in the interior, as they had really good wings, and we were without our best wings, so we need David to be a 20-10 type guy. Well, he was good for 14-14 in that one, and that's the type of performance that, you know, with him, obviously, he's been up and down, and sustaining and maintaining is the key, but to know that he delivered on a day where he was challenged by his head coach that we have to play through you is obviously a great sight to see. So you leave that with a lot of positive, you know, feeling like this club incrementally got better in numerous ways, and now hopefully you get Ochai back on Saturday. There's no guarantee. Coach talked about it last night on Hawk Talk, that based on when the symptoms started and you know, 5 days that he will quarantine, so long as he can produce a negative test by Saturday, he'll play. Now, some people, even after 5 or 6 days, you know, struggle to get that negative test, and he'll be having to produce that in order to play. So we can't count our Jayhawks before they hatch. You just assume that he's going to be back, but according to Coach last night, he's feeling fine, and he's feeling better. And so those are good descriptors there. And, again, it'll be in the hands of, you know, PCR tests coming up here in the next 48 hours or so. But to get him back, and obviously Baylor's been dealing with some injury woes themselves. They've had two of their top three players out on Monday versus West Virginia, and their status is questionable heading in. So it's going to be interesting, but I think Kansas may have dodged the bullet here if it just proves to be a one-game absence and you found a way to win without it.
We talk about when somebody goes down, and we see this in sports all the time. You know this for covering sports for many years, that it's usually it's a short-term rally from the standpoint that, okay, you're missing a key guy for a game or two, maybe for a week, depending on the sport. You can rally the wagons around the backup quarterback, or you can have some other kids step up for, you know, replacing a top scorer like Ochai Agbaji. But over the course of a whole season, it'll show. You're not going to be as good if you play a whole season without, you know, Patrick Mahomes, obviously, or without Ochai Agbaji. But at the same time, it gives other kids an opportunity. And, you know, Yusefu is a kid that I really pull for, because I've been watching him closely when he does come onto the floor, when he goes off, and when he's actually on the floor, and when he makes a mistake. And I feel like that's a kid that isn't playing free. If it seems to me like he's always worried about pleasing the coaches and worried about making a mistake. And when he does, he's looking over there. And I don't think you can, as an athlete, you're going to be that successful if you're always worried about coach yanking you out of a game, or if you can't play with a free mind, or your first thought is, I don't want to mess up, instead of, hey, I'm going to go make a play. You and I talked about that recently. But talk about him getting that opportunity. You know, he didn't score 25 points and have 10 assists, but he did some really good things, and what that could do for his confidence, and how this can, you know, make a team stronger, because some guys get some opportunities, and that also gives them opportunity to prove something to their coach, to where maybe he can trust them more.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear Bill Self say in the post game, maybe I've been playing the wrong guys. And, you know, he's not, after one game, going to adjust the depth chart pecking order dramatically. But I think it clearly shows that he can lean on Joseph more. And it's not like it just happened on Tuesday. He's been coming on in practice of late, settling in more, proving to his teammates and his coaches that he's finally, you know, feeling like he's at home here at Kansas. Because it's tough. I mean, you go from playing at Drake, where he's easily the fastest guy on the floor every day in practice and usually in every matchup, to now going into life in the Big 12, where he may still have elite explosion, but he's smaller and it's harder against these bigger guys that are still pretty fast and still have pretty good burst. And he needed an acclimation period. And because he cares so much and tries so hard, you're absolutely right. I think his confidence at times was wavering a bit because he would get in and you know, it might not come easy or quickly to him. And next thing you know, he's right there on the bench and thinking, oh my gosh, you know, I got to be perfect next time. And he would press a little bit. But here's a kid that, you know, when he was playing free, as you said, with a clear conscience and a long leash and all that, we saw him average 23 points a game over the final nine games of last season for Drake. And so it's in there, you know, and we saw him, you know, in the NCAA tournament make some incredible plays that were highlight reel moments for the whole Big Dance. So he's got it, and I think that it'll be interesting, you know, if Remy sits another game or two, what is the ultimate, you know, what's the ultimate workload look like for Joseph Yesufu? And then when Remy comes back, how does Self divvy up the bench minutes? I want to say this about Remy, though. Remy the other night was as engaged as I've ever seen him on the sideline. He was standing up, calling out defensive scouting report stuff. He was helping signal in plays. He looked like a guy that knew, okay, Oach and I are both out. Oach can't do anything from at home. He's quarantined. I'm going to at least bring something to the mix. And I just saw more senior leadership and more buy-in than I think a lot of Kansas fans have witnessed in recent weeks, where when he's been taken out of a game, Remy kind of sits sometimes on the bench with a towel draped over his knees and one over his head, and you don't see him, you know, as active as much. He was really involved. And so I think that's a great sign. Yeah. And you know, who knows what it's going to look like, because I don't know how many minutes you truly have to go around after DeJuan comes off the floor, because DeJuan just proved the other night, I mean, that's the best we've seen him play defensively all season. It's the most efficient we've seen him offensively, both in shooting the ball and passing it, career high 8 assists. So while Self would like to back off his minutes by 4 or 5 a game just to keep him fresher, that's only 4 or 5 extra minutes. And I think you're going to eventually get a healthy Remy, and then you're going to really have a log jam there. But a good problem to have. I think if anybody has slipped a little bit in the pecking order, it's Jalen Coleman-Lands. And he hit the 2 early threes, but there were some other moments where, you know, Coach Self didn't like his decision on a couple of up and under dipsy do type driving finishes and a missed assignment here and there defensively that have it moving down a bit. But I'm still high on him too. I really feel like, you know, there's going to be moments where he has to come in and provide that 3-point prowess. I just think right now, as you said, Joseph Yesufu's stock is as high as it's been at Kansas. And I think Remy Martin, depending on this 5 to 14 day layoff, whatever it proves to be, Coach Self wouldn't commit to a number, but said it was somewhere in that range. I think it's safe to say that his stock is a hold, but maybe a hold with a slight arrow next to it, because I just look at his body language and I see a guy that really wants to get right physically and really wants to do what he was brought here to do, and that's helped get this team to the Final Four.
No doubt. Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, brought to you each and every Thursday on the Sports Ticket by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Millen Boyd, or call them at 738-5701. So the matchup coming up on Saturday, and as you just pointed out, don't know if Ochai will be cleared to play or not. Of course, you can have a plan A and a plan B. That coaches do that a lot sometimes, not know who's going to be playing, especially here the last, you know, 18 months with sports and COVID and everything else. But this is for the Big 12 lead. We are virtually at the halfway point of the Big 12 season, Brian. KU 7-1, Baylor 7-2, Texas Tech's there lingering at 6-3, and they had an emotional win over Texas the other night. But if Baylor, the winner of this KU-Baylor game, will have sole possession of first place, when it's all said and done. Tip time at 3 o'clock, pregame at 2:30 on Saturday. What about the Bears, and how important, of course, is it to hold serve on your home court? Because KU still got to go to Waco later this year, and the Bears, as we know, have gone in and actually have. They have won in Lawrence after a very long time where they couldn't.
Yeah, no doubt. There was a while there where Scott Drew had more losses than Allen Fieldhouse and Bill Self did. That's obviously no longer the case. But yeah, they're really impressive. I mean, they've reloaded tremendously well. To lose all the star power that they did, from Teague to Davion Mitchell to Butler, I mean, it's amazing how they flipped the switch and launched themselves right back into the top 10. The biggest name on the list of new Baylor stars is James Akinjo. He's coming off a 25-point game on Monday where he was forced to do more because two of their other top three scorers were out due to injury. And, again, we'll see what it looks like come Saturday for them here in the next 24 to 48 hours. But in the case of Akinjo, he's a transfer from Arizona. And I don't think he's on the first tier of National Player of the Year candidates, but I do think he's kind of a projected second-team All-American right now, and that's amazing. You know, when you transfer to a school and you post those kind of numbers right away, he's been terrific. He's explosive off the bounce. He can score at all three levels, and he can also set up for others. So he's been one that Kansas will have to be wary of. And they've also got maybe more length than they had last year. That's Coach Self's description, not mine. And, you know, I think kids I've watched step up in spurts. That, you know, you've seen him for a couple of years now, but Matthew Meyer, who's kind of that big, gangly, tall, he kind of looks like Shaggy from Scooby-Doo.
Yes.
Kind of looks like Luke Axtell back in the day. Yes. In Kansas. You remember that name?
Yes.
He has saved them twice versus West Virginia. They could have lost both those games versus the Mountaineers, who might be in the bottom two teams in the Big 12. But in key junctures, he's just stepped up, got offensive rebounds, hit threes, made plays when others couldn't. And he's just one of those glue guy type players that's not going to go out there and lead you in scoring necessarily. He averages 9.8 a game. But in certain spurts, he can take over a game. And I think he was as critical as any Bear down the stretch the other night. So, you know, we'll see what their full roster strength looks like come Saturday. But this is definitely a team that has clearly risen to the top with the Kansas Jayhawks, where we thought it might be Texas. It's so obviously Baylor and Texas Tech as the next two best teams. And I say next two because I still think Kansas is the class of this conference, but this is their chance to prove it on Saturday. And obviously if you don't win this one, then, as you mentioned, going to Waco becomes a must-win. Bill Self still feels like this Kansas team or Baylor team will wind up as a one seed. Whoever wins this league is that good, the league is, that they'll deserve a one seed. But after losing at home to Kentucky, games like this one on Saturday are all the more important for your final resume and your seed line and all that. So this is a big one on a lot of levels, most importantly for the league race. And we feel like the Jayhawks have a great shot should they get Ochai back.
Yeah, and then you turn around, if you get the emotional big win over Baylor on Saturday, you don't have a lot of time to savor it because you got to go on the road and take on Texas and Austin. And we know Texas is very talented. They've been up and down this year, but they're very talented. So as Coach Self talks about it, there's no rest for the weary when you're in this conference. You still have to establish yourself. And KU's done that many times over the years, Brian, you know, playing on a Saturday, a big marquee game, and then turn around and play on Big Monday. But it's just, there's just no rest in this conference this year, is there?
There isn't. And yet, if you could find a way to win both of these next two games, holy smokes. I mean, you would put yourself at 9-1 with your next two games at home versus OU and OSU.
Who are struggling.
Count your chickens before they hatch, but you'd be in strong position to be 11-1 at that point. Because here's how it's worked out. With TCU being the first team we were supposed to face, that game was postponed due to health and safety protocol issues within the Baylor program. Within the TCU program. That's now been moved to almost a doubleheader. It's separated by a couple of days. But we play them back-to-back in March. What that means is we sit here right now at 7-1, and five of our eight league games have been on the road.
Yeah.
If you could sweep these next two, then you would get to 9-1, and you would have six of your road games out of the way, 10 games in, and you'd have a home win over Baylor.
Yeah.
Now, that's not sewing anything up, but, man, that's as far in the driver's seat as you could be based on what's left on your remaining schedule, home versus road, and based on who you've already had to go through. So I'm just saying it's a pivotal stretch where a Kansas team that right now has a half-game lead could really grab a stronghold on this league race if you find a way to win both of those next two. Easier said than done, certainly.
Sure.
But we saw a lot of moxie and a lot of grit out of these guys on Tuesday that makes you think a couple of games like that is certainly possible.
No, I would agree with you. All right, Brian, time for the off-the-wall question. This one's going to be different than we've ever asked you before. I happened to catch this show on the History Channel, and it just happened to be on TV, and I didn't even know what the name of the show was. I saw the H in the corner of the TV screen, but what caught my attention was it was all about ice cream and ice cream cones, how they make ice cream, how they make the different flavors, how they make the waffle cones. And I listen, if I wasn't married to my wife, I'd be married to ice cream. People that know me know that I love ice cream. And so on this show, they have some trivia questions when they go to break. And this is pretty amazing stuff. Do you have any idea, Brian, any idea of how much the world spends per day on ice cream? You have any idea how much money the world per day spends on ice cream?
Wow. Gosh, it must be astronomical.
It's a lot.
400 million?
Not that high. $175 million a day people across the world spend on ice cream. That's per day. Now, here's your second part of the question, and you can, you know, bust this on Gurley or whoever, you know, make yourself look really smart, even though you already are, is where? What country do you think eats the most ice cream per capita? Any idea?
Wow.
It's not the USA, which I would have said.
What
was
hemisphere?
Oh no, don't test my geography stuff here. Well, I can tell you that, I'll give you three options here. Okay. United Kingdom, New Zealand or Canada. United Kingdom, New Zealand or Canada.
Ooh, wow. I'll go New Zealand.
Ding, ding, ding. You win the free ice cream, Brian.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah. New Zealand eats the most ice cream. So do you have a favorite ice cream flavor, or, you know, there's Rocky Road. They're making new flavors all the time and testing stuff I saw on the show. Is there a particular flavor that you really love over others, or one that surprised you if you are a taste tester of ice cream?
Well, you know, back when we were kids, you probably had like 10 standard flavors. Cookies and cream comes along and it's like revolutionary with the Oreo, you know, inside the vanilla. And it's so great. Now, you know, there's 1,001 flavors, and usually wherever you go, you can find something that's like chocolatey and chunky and will make you chunky if you eat a lot of it. but you kind of that double chocolate chunk, and whether it's got cookie bits in it or bits of big chocolate chunks, whatever, I love that. Kind of that double chocolate type flavor is my absolute favorite.
I am totally with you on that. All right, man. Well, I appreciate the time as always. You're going to have two good games to call coming up Saturday against Baylor and on the road at Texas. Safe travels, my friend. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right. Sounds good, buddy. Always a pleasure.
Take care, Brian Hayne. The voice of the Jayhawks, brought to you each and every week here on The Ticket on Thursdays by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Mill and Beloit, or call them at 738-5701.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.